Well, folks, it's race day down at the track for Team NCAA. And though we are in the right city, this ain't the Indy 500. It's more like the Indy 500,000, where the NCAA oversees 500,000 college athletes from their headquarters in the Hoosier State. Charlie Baker's got the team car decked out in all their sponsored decals. We are also available, by the way, so what's in your wallet? And just as he's making the turn on lap 9, he decides, I'm actually going off-road. Flies right off the speedway. Historically, emphatically, off-road. He looks at all that history we just laid out last week and decides, yeah, this probably isn't going to work. And just like that, we're making new history. And we're all along for the ride.
Tonight, a bold idea from the NCAA president, proposing for the first time ever, schools be allowed to pay student-athletes. In a letter to more than 350 Division I schools, Baker called for an entirely new athletic division to be created. Participating schools would invest at least $30,000 for each qualifying athlete, male or female, annually, and work with the NCAA to craft different rules for the new division.
To me, this acknowledges what many have been saying for a long time. There are a number of D1 Power 5 programs that are so far removed from the rest of their peers that they should literally play by their own rules. I think confronting that is commendable. Baker has the NCAA doing more than the organization ever has before to try and meet those athletes halfway. The skeptic in me says it's self-preservation under duress, with apologies to Jack Welch, changing once you have to, not before. The optimist, on the other hand, says it's historic progress. Overdue, sure, but forward-looking and hugely welcome. In either case, it's a potentially seismic shift. Potentially. Because the NCAA does not have the iron-fisted leverage it once did, it's been asking for a lot of help lately, mainly from Washington, and it still is to little avail. This latest effort is Baker's best shot at changing that. Heading into a presidential election cycle, that's going to be a tall order, but he's been whipping votes, so to speak, for a while now. Early on in Baker's tenure, and let's be clear, we're still pretty early now, there was a whole news beat around how much time Baker was spending on the Hill. Here's a funny little exchange with ESPN's Pete Thamel at a panel in June.
We are in Washington right now, a place where you, starting your tenure as NCAA president, have decided to spend more time, maybe more time than Indianapolis, and I'll lose the obligatory...
Not true.
I'll lose the obligatory not wanting to live in an Indianapolis joke, and just start off why you prioritized, Charlie, spending time in Washington, D.C., and what are the realities of Congress being an answer to some of college sports' biggest questions?
Well, first of all, I don't spend more time in Washington than I spend in Indianapolis. I have an apartment there. I'm usually there 2 or 3 days a week, and I'm traveling most of the rest of the week. The place I haven't been spending any time is in Massachusetts.
To state the obvious, this doesn't have much to do with standard of living. It's still about the table at which you want a seat, and it's still about the room in which you want a voice. And with apologies to Leslie Knope & Co., and also, out of an abundance of caution, Larry Bird, neither the table nor the room are in the state of Indiana. They're in Washington, and that's where you'll find Charlie Baker pulling up a chair. This is The Option, Episode 3. Hail Charlie. First, let's clarify. Most of what the NCAA does today is not governed by federal law. There are rules that any universities getting public funding do have to follow, like Title IX, which we'll touch on later. But that's about as close as Congress has gotten to truly legislating college sports. The lines of college sports are instead drawn in pencil by the schools, by the conferences, and by the NCAA. But now that we've got the Supreme Court waving around an eraser, and dozens of states sketching out some new lines of their own, what the NCAA is asking Congress to do is draw over all the old lines in bold federal pen, permanent ink. They want the same assurances from Congress that they had from the Supreme Court, even if that was only ever in dicta, that the amateur collegiate model is worth protecting. But wanting Congress to be involved is quite a change of heart. Take it from the Knight Commission's Amy Perko.
When I began doing this work with the Knight Commission, at that time, the thought was, we're going to put together our own commission, an independent commission that can create this roadmap so that we can keep Congress out of college sports. And fast forward to today, the NCAA, its basic position is we have to have a congressional solution for college sports.
Nobody wants Congress in their business until they need them. But if you're the NCAA and you're not seeing a great way out of this mess, then the road through Washington starts to look more and more appealing. And since you're also looking for new leadership, you, NCAA, probably say to yourself, hey, maybe we ought to find somebody who can play ball in Washington. That would make sense, right? A politician to lead us through a politicized moment in our history. Maybe a former governor of Massachusetts? Washington does love former governors of Massachusetts.
It did not come as a surprise, but Michael Dukakis did make it official today, declaring his candidacy for president.
No, not that one. Do yourself a favor, though, and Google Dukakis in the tank later. Just take my word on that.
Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney announces his bid for the 2012 Republican presidential nomination.
Still no, but closer, I guess. Someone a little less Utah.
Former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick is joining the race for president.
With all due respect, I kind of forgot he ran. Seriously, though, can these guys not think of anything else to do?
Governor Charlie Baker has been named the next president of the NCAA.
There we go. Finally, somebody with some vision. But hold on. How is his eyesight? WZ political analyst John Keller.
Why do you think Governor Baker was chosen?
He was the only person in America willing to take the job, I think. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Although I'm only half kidding.
Yeah.
This is, in many ways, a nightmare job at a nightmare time.
It wasn't at all obvious that someone who'd very recently left 8 years of statewide office would want to take on such a Sisyphean nightmare of a job.
Because after 8 years as governor, you know, almost the whole second half dominated by COVID. I mean, I think everyone was like, dude, go on vacation for 6 months. Why are you taking this job?
That's Matt Stout, a reporter for the Boston Globe, who covered Baker for all 8 of those years.
It wasn't that he wasn't a good fit for it. It was like, why don't you go sit on a couple boards and make good money and, you know, like have your time. That was the surprising part of it, to a degree.
The other surprise, sort of, is that Baker had been a guy who had really shown no appetite for an arguably more public position than the one he already had. He was, by many measures, the most popular governor in America as a Republican in a deep blue state at a time of profound political division. That makes for a compelling profile for higher office, if that's what he was after. And he got that question over and over and over. But he always said no.
Are you ruling out a run for national office, Governor? Are you ruling out a run for president?
Yeah.
That's funny, guys. Good one. How about a real challenge? Forget running the country. Try the NCAA. And maybe I'm stretching here. You can tell me. But running that organization is at least sort of like national office. Maybe you just didn't like the state of our national politics. Can't imagine why. But yeah, he chose a different route. And this isn't just a change of pace for Baker. Until now, everyone who's ever run the NCAA, even Walter Byers, has come more directly from the world of college sports. Mostly university presidents, athletic directors, those types. Baker is not that type. So it stands to reason that he was chosen for a reason. And when you hear him talk about NIL, you start to see it. From one Chuck to another on Meet the Press in early April.
And I think Congress has a chance to do what I would describe as consumer protections here. One athletic director, I think, put it pretty well when they said that the only thing that's true right now about NIL is that everybody lies. And I think we should have a public registry of NIL deals. I think we should have what I would describe as financial literacy opportunities for families and student athletes, a certification process for agents, and a uniform standard contract. And these are all things we've talked to folks in Congress about, and I was thrilled to see them have a hearing on this.
Charlie Baker is what I would describe as a smooth operator. He's well-spoken, he sticks his points, sounds sharp but relatable. He's selling, yeah, but he's subtle about his subtlety, and he's not so buttoned up that you wouldn't believe what he has to say. And those in the NIL game seem to think he's on the right track.
So Governor Baker has used the word consumer protection. I think that's the right word.
That's Blake Lawrence, the CEO of the leading NIL platform, Open Doors, who obviously has a huge stake in any legislation that could be coming down to regulate his industry. So he makes an analogy to another industry.
If you've ever heard of the Sunshine Act in pharmaceuticals, that was a consumer protection issue. The pharmaceutical industry and the pharmaceutical sales reps would be able to take doctors out to dinner and take them on vacations, take them on golfing trips. And it was never known whether a doctor was writing a script for you to a certain drug because they liked one of the sales reps and that just took them on vacation, or if that was the right drug for you. And that became an issue for consumer protection. So the federal government required Sunshine, which is that pharmaceutical companies that provide any level of compensation to doctors have to report who they paid and how much. In that publicly accessible database, anyone in the world can look up and you can find out who's paying your doctors. And just the act of requiring Sunshine helped regulate an unregulated industry that is very disparate and hard to manage. Sunshine improved the consumer protection in pharmaceuticals, and Sunshine can improve consumer protection in NIL. It's just, can we get there and how soon?
Hearing it described by Lawrence, by Baker, and by many others, it all seems perfectly sound and even a little obvious. And Baker himself has been candid about how the NIL revolution caught the organization he now leads flat-footed.
I think it was a big mistake for the NCAA not to do a framework around NIL when they had the opportunity. And I think there were too many people in college sports who thought no rules would work really well for them. And what everybody's discovered is no rules, no transparency, no accountability, no framework. It doesn't work well for anybody.
Under Baker, they've tried a little harder to get a handle on all this, but they're not exactly working from a position of strength. They're a little hemmed in, so they're playing their hand. They also kind of dealt the cards, but at this point, they're hoping that Congress comes through on the river. And they're also hoping that they've pulled an ace with Baker. If anyone can see this through, maybe it's him. He does bring a kind of unique track record. The Boston Globe's Matt Stout.
He was first elected in 2015 as sort of this technocratic, fixer that was coming in at a time in state government where there were, array of problems. I mean, there were problems at the Child Welfare Department, the Department of Children and Families, with what was called like sort of the state's health connector, which connects people with, health insurance. And he is a former health insurance executive.
Health insurance is one of the few fields out there that is actually more complicated, but it still can't tell you that much about someone's approach to college sports. And yet, those familiar with Baker say they would expect the same general playbook.
I mean, this is a guy, at an interview that him asked him, at least sort of respond to criticism of like, because he's so this like detail-oriented guy of well, you can't see the forest through the trees. And he said, like, well, the way you fix the forest is one tree at a time. That's how he does it. So, I mean, how many trees does he have to fix in the NCAA forest? That might be endless. So I think at least how we approach it is they'll try to pick off as many as he could, because that's sort of how the man thinks. That's how he operates.
And if the problematic trees aren't quite endless, they're awfully close. This is an old growth forest he's working in, and it's hard to just stride into Congress, solutions in hand, with all those decades of NCAA baggage weighing you down.
The only thing that Congress can agree on and have consensus on is their hate for the NCAA.
That's Ross Dellinger, senior college football reporter for Yahoo Sports.
I think that the change at the top with Charlie Baker replacing Mark Emmert is probably the start to fixing that perception. It's been a struggle. You know, those four letters are just, they have a bad connotation, not only on the Hill, but throughout the country.
And that's not the only reason Baker's starting at a disadvantage. Let me remind you, we are a house divided. So if you thought the two parties could agree on this, then allow Dellinger to set you straight.
But they can't agree. Big surprise, Republicans and Democrats cannot agree. While Republicans want a more narrow bill that just polices NIL, Democrats want something that's far greater and more in-depth, that covers healthcare and scholarships and transfers. And so they've got to come together in some way. And we're about to enter a presidential election cycle, and that's usually not the time that legislation gets passed very easily.
Different lawmakers have put forward different solutions, and they aren't out of the picture even with Baker's bold new proposal. So, by way of examples, allow me to present two very different senators who have put forward two bills to try and be the one who fixes this. In one corner, we've got Alabama Republican Tommy Tuberville, who's probably still best known in the state as the former head football coach at Auburn.
The undefeated season has happened. The first time in the history of Auburn football, 13-0.
He won Coach of the Year in that 2004 season, and the Tigers finished second as the USC Trojans took home the national title, which was later vacated, but that's a whole other thing. Staying with Tuberville, though, when you hear his perspective on these issues, he speaks with the outlook of a coach who no longer has to worry about pissing off the NCAA or sitting across from a recruit. He's not exactly pulling punches. Here he is talking to the friendly crowd on Crane & Company at the Daily Wire back in 2022.
NCAA dropped the ball on this. And they said, we don't want any more lawsuits. Y'all have at it, and that's what they've done.
Tuberville joined forces with West Virginia's Joe Manchin to put forward a more right-leaning solution to all this NIL business. Their plan is more sympathetic to schools, and while the three proposals out there have a lot in common, one difference here is reforming the transfer portal, rolling it back to more like it used to be, requiring players to stay put for 3 years, outside of key exceptions like your coach leaving or health issues. Rolling back the portal might be a non-starter for a lot of Democrats, but it's also got stuff like pulling in the Federal Trade Commission to oversee a standardized NIL contract. That is not an idea you'd expect to hear from conservative lawmakers, but Tuberville says they need to impose order. And let's be real, their bill does have the best name. The PASS Act. Pass the PASS Act, like a ball. Sports. Here he is again in August.
The end game on this is Joe Manchin and I wanted to make sure that we get all 50 states doing some basic points and then give the NCAA an opportunity to build on it from there. And if we don't do this, we're going to lose college sports as we all know it.
And that last part there is pretty similar to what you'll hear from another prominent senator working on this, New Jersey Democrat Cory Booker.
If we don't fix this problem, sports as we know will change it, and we all should feel that urgency.
To be clear, that's Senate testimony from June 2021 that you're hearing. But Booker has been on this hill, on the Hill, for a while now. He put a bill out in July, too, alongside Connecticut Democrat Richard Blumenthal and Kansas Republican Jerry Moran. It's moved closer to the center than where it started a few years ago. At its core, though, it has the same elements it started with, what they describe as an athlete's bill of rights.
The story we sell is that this is about the kids, this is about the athletes, but that is fundamentally not true. And so the expiration of an athlete's college career should not mean that they're expendable. Now is the time for the NCAA to evolve as an organization to truly put the students first, and their concerns and their needs.
It also demands new levels of financial transparency from schools and athletic programs, and in a big new swing, seeks to create a whole new regulatory body to handle endorsements for college athletes. 0 points on the name, though. College Athletics Corporation. Sounds inspired. Really, though, their bill is more similar to the last one than either group would care to admit. Both seek to bring order to the chaotic world of NIL and fairly similar ways. Then, bear with me here, we have a third bill brought by Connecticut's other Democratic Senator, Chris Murphy, and Democratic Congresswoman Lori Trahan from Massachusetts. In keeping with our theme, they've been plenty critical of the NCAA for a long time, too. Here was Murphy back in October 2020, talking at an event hosted by Duke Law School.
The NCAA and many of their members simply don't believe that these students have a right to a voice, right? They really do believe that they should be happy with this relatively meager amount of compensation, the athletic scholarship, and shut up. I mean, that's essentially their view.
So it's easy to see why he's got a very player-friendly bill. It's also the most narrowly focused on the NIL issue, firming up federal protections for athletes' future NIL rights and mandating something called group licensing, meaning revenue sharing with the athletes in all future deals between conferences and TV networks. It even nods to a future players' association at the college level, which is important for reasons we'll get to. Now, With all of this, reasonable people can disagree with the ins and outs of each bill. There's plenty to unpack here, and those aren't even all the bills that have been proposed. For instance, the chamber's most famously well-liked Senator Ted Cruz has also entered the chat.
And across the board, I'm hearing real concern about the state of college athletics right now, that it is the Wild West, and that there is a real risk that if Congress doesn't act and act quickly, that we risk doing enormous damage to a system that is providing enormous benefit to millions of Americans.
His bill, released in October, explicitly states that college athletes are not to be considered employees of their universities, which is something you may have heard come up in the news lately, and we'll keep coming back to on this series. But even as more legislation is rolled out, there's another point that needs to be made here. For the time being, it's entirely possible that none of this really matters. The Senate remains in a bitter 51-49 split, which means any vision for legislation would take major bipartisan support. A minimum of 9 Republicans going left or 11 Democrats going right. I'd count on neither. It's been about 4 years now since NIL started coming on the scene, and none of these bills, many of which have been around in some version for years, have ever even gone to a vote. But conference commissioners are now joining forces to try and push Congress in their biggest move yet to try and get this moving. And while they aren't going to win any awards for a novel name either, everyone wave hello to the Coalition for the Future of College Athletics. It's not hard to see how big-time college sports programs could make for convincing lobbyists.
I think the SEC has a lot of cachet among SEC senators and representatives. I think the Big Ten has a lot of sway with the equivalent in the Midwest and now in California, even potentially, with UCLA and USC joining the Big Ten.
That's economist Andy Schwartz, a longtime critic of the NCAA, who's advocated for college athletes getting free access to the open market.
Every major state university with a football program has two senators that see that school as their constituent, far more than the young, just became voters who go to the schools who stand to lose.
Schwartz, as do many, considers the NCAA to be effectively cornered if the legal losses keep piling up. But that's what he's worried about.
So they're turning to Congress as their last hope. And I'm afraid it's going to work. All of the gains that have come to athletes in the couple decades that I've been working in this space, back since 1999 or so, have come either through the courts or through state law. And both of those can be overridden in a heartbeat if Congress passes a law and the president signs it.
And yes, Schwartz is talking about NIL there to an extent, but what he's really talking about is what could come along with it or follow it. Protections for the NCAA's amateurism model. And that right there is the real hail, Charlie. An antitrust exemption.
It seems to me that the NCAA is asking for an antitrust exemption that would apply to everything.
Rick Karcher is a professor at Eastern Michigan University and an expert on the intersection of sports and labor law.
I think they'd like to get Congress to say, hey, you know, you're exempt from all antitrust claims with respect to any claim related to anything from players, from the perspective of players. Actually, if you ask them, they'd say not just athletes, but anything and everything.
Because if the law, in this case, antitrust law, isn't on your side, then one creative workaround would be getting Congress to pass a new law that says the first law does not apply to you. Now, to be clear, that doesn't seem particularly likely, but it's not impossible. Exemptions do exist. And the irony of who those notable exceptions are was helpfully pointed out by Rich Eisen on his show last year.
And by the way, you know what? You know who gets antitrust exemptions? Professional sports leagues. Right. Professional sports leagues get antitrust exemptions. That's not the way out of it.
Professional sports leagues are exempt from the usual antitrust laws, mainly because they have players' unions. Essentially, because the players in the leagues come to decide on all their rules by collective bargaining, then as far as the law is concerned, you're all set on the antitrust front. ESPN's Jay Billis, once more with feeling.
The difference in professional sports versus college sports is the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, they have collective bargaining agreements. And there is what I would call a safe harbor in the Sherman Antitrust Act for collective bargaining. And so if the NCAA wanted to collectively bargain with the players, they could certainly do that. They don't want to. And when I have people say, well, the NFL has a salary cap, the NBA has a salary cap, you know, there should be a salary cap in college. Okay, if you want that, you have to collectively bargain for it. And remember one thing, in the NBA, at least, the players get 50% of the basketball-related revenue. Now, if the NCAA wants to give up 50% of the revenue to the athletes, I'd like to see them do that. They're not going to do that.
Jay is probably right here. While the NCAA is looking newly open to compromise, it almost definitely doesn't want to go that far. They still oppose anything that would lead to college athletes being recognized as employees. They have their own self-interested reasons for that, but in fairness, it would bring up all sorts of complicated legal quandaries, cutting across state lines and public and private institutions that make all of the above look pretty straightforward by comparison. And again, that's not to give college sports a pass, but that backdrop is worth acknowledging, especially if you're someone who does want to see change. We've said it many times now, but only because it's true. This is complicated. Funny thing is, it wasn't always. This all used to be a much smaller operation, concerned really with just one sport, which happens to be the same sport it's mainly concerned with today. Maybe you've heard of it. Football. We'll pay a visit to the original Roosevelt administration to ask if it's cool if we call him Teddy, but more importantly, why he concerned himself with the fate of the old varsity leatherheads. That's next time on The Option. The music you heard in this episode comes from Epidemic Sounds. Production and sound editing by Dean Metherill and Joe Engelbrecht. Cover art by Sam Ball. And I'm your host, Michael Hendricks. Catch you next time.